Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
On today's episode, it's you and me talking about my favourite TV shows from 2023. My name is Justin Hamilton, and I don't have square eyes. That's just the shape of my glasses here on Big Squid. Hello and welcome to the podcast. It's great to have your company. And some of you are probably thinking, why is he doing a best of 2023 so far into 2024? And I'll tell you, like, it's a deliberate choice. It is because I don't understand people and other podcasts that do best ofs for the year before the year has ended. So that makes no sense to me. And you know, I kind of include TV shows that started in 2023 and I want to see how they end. And look, to each their own. Everyone else does their podcast in their way. But I'm always curious to be sitting there and hearing another podcast or people trying to rank things and saying, yeah, this might have been higher, but I'll just have to wait and see how it ends. And it's like, well, Why don't you just wait and see how it ends? Because how can you judge something? How can you put it anywhere if you don't know how it ends? There are two shows on my list, I reckon, that were probably, if I'd just watched them halfway through, would have been halfway down the favorite list. But waiting for them to end, and then the reverberations that they sent backwards through the show, based on the way they landed it, they bumped all the way up. There is one show in particular that I reckon was probably around the, you know, maybe the 7-8 mark, because I was enjoying it so much. And then the way it ended up at number 3. But I have to say, looking at this list, the top 5 in particular was really difficult, and I reckon probably on any given day the top 3 could easily swap around. It was difficult to land exactly on where I wanted to be with this stuff. But anyway, that's why I give it a little bit more time to settle, and I try to give it some time to have a little think about it, and then I come up with this list. And I watched quite a bit last year, and this was, God, hang on, let's just see how much stuff I watched. I watched about, you know, roughly about 50 things over the course of the year. Some of that stuff was me revisiting old TV shows. I rewatched The Singing Detective, which was a show that blew my mind in the 80s and has, I am very excited to say, held up. It's really held up, and it's made me very happy to realise that it's still the business. There's some shows here that I really enjoyed that didn't end up making the top list, and, you know, looking at them, it's like, God, I reckon they could have ended up. You know, like, I really enjoyed Poker Face. I really enjoyed season two of Perry Mason. They just didn't quite get there. I enjoyed White House Plumbers. I felt like it was a little bit flawed, but I still really enjoyed it. Silo, I really enjoyed Winning Time. I know lots of people had issues with it, but I thought it was, you know, I wasn't watching it as a documentary series. I was watching it as a soap opera around my favorite basketball team of all time. So when things weren't quite right, I wasn't necessarily watching it for it to be accountable. I can understand why people didn't like that, but I was completely fine with it. And anyway. And I finally got around to watching TV shows like This Is Going to Hurt and The Hour, seasons 1 and 2, which were great. I watched all 3 seasons of The Tunnel. I really loved that. Finally watched the first season of Derry Girls, which was fantastic. So, you know, there was a lot of really good stuff up there. But I managed to get it down to a favourite top 10. But I'm just going to do 3 honourable mentions. So we'll kick off with that in no particular order. John Oliver. I love John Oliver. He could easily be the number one show of the year, but I kind of have kept it to... It was funny because I never miss an episode, and I think it's so clever and I think it's so well put together. And I've just kind of kept it to, you know, fictional TV series. But I feel like John Oliver's over in his own category, as he is for the Emmys now, because everyone was getting too frustrated, I guess, that he kept winning. So they put him in a different category. So John Oliver, over on his own little universe, I love that show. Another TV show that nearly cracked my top 10 was The Swarm, which starred Dominique Fishback, who plays a young woman called Dre, who is obsessed with a pop star whose fan base is known as The Swarm. And the show digs into her life and her fandom and how it can really go off the deep end. Took some big swings, had some crazy guest stars in it, Rory Culkin. Paris Jackson is really good. So I really enjoyed that. I watched that on Amazon Prime. And, you know, it rolls the dice on some of the ways that it tells its story. And I love that. I love that they, you know, went for it. And episode to episode was, you know... Sometimes there was a lot of gnashing of teeth. You know, you're sitting there going, oh, please don't do that. Oh, don't do that. The main character is, I guess, a sort of anti-hero. I'm not even sure that's correct. But an absolute dominant performance by Dominique Fishback, who I've enjoyed in other TV shows as well. So it was nice to see her get a starring role, especially with such a tasty lead character to play. I originally saw her in Show Me a Hero, but it was in The Deuce that she really stood out to me, one of my favourite TV shows of the last 10 years and one that kind of flies under the radar. So if you're looking for something that's a little bit different, that's a little bit dark and experimental, I would heartily suggest The Swarm. The other TV show that I enjoyed was a mini-series. It was series 2. Each series of this is different. It's a TV show called Time. I guess it's an anthology series. It's each season is about people being incarcerated in the UK. I thought the first season was great. Second season, just as good for completely different reasons, starring Bella Ramsey and Jodie Whittaker and Tamara Lawrence as people who have, for different reasons, ended up in jail, and they have to find their way through this life. Three episodes each. They're pretty heavy. And once again, could easily have cracked my top 10. So those are the honourable mentions. So let's get to number 10, which was the television miniseries Beef, which is a miniseries and now is going to become a TV series. So it stars Steven Yeun and Ali Wong, two pretty unlikable characters in many ways who end up having a moment where they cross paths and it does not go well. And then they decide to essentially get revenge upon each other. Another one of those TV shows where sometimes funny, sometimes you're just a little bit on edge and you wish they would calm the fuck down. But lots of great characters around them. And once again, kind of goes into areas that you're not quite expecting, and it does get experimental at points. Some of the supporting characters are fantastic, and even when you're not particularly liking who you're watching which character you're focused on, there's still enough going on around it that it's funny, and there's kind of other people you can have empathy for in scenes. And, you know, once again, even though all the characters, like the main characters of Danny and Amy, are pretty on the nose, that it's still enjoyable. And at times, it's good writing, I think. At times, I did kind of have empathy for them, even when I could have easily just shaken them until they fell apart like a sculpture or something. It's hard to explain. It sounds like I'm dissing the TV show, but I think they did a really good job of balancing, you know, the comedy and the drama, and it's kind of a thriller, and it's at times psychological. So I felt like that was a real win for me in the year. Coming in at number 9 was Mrs. Davis, a show starring Betty Gilpin as a nun who is very much married to her faith, but she's taking on a world of technology. And it's each episode, you know, week to week was, you know, really fascinating because you didn't quite know where anything was going, what was real, what wasn't real, what was imagined. You know, it's the idea of this artificial intelligence known as Mrs. Davis was quite prescient for where we are at the moment. I really enjoyed it week to week, and I was right into it. And to be honest, interestingly, when I was going back through my best of or favourite TV shows of the year, I realised that I hadn't really thought about it since I'd watched it. Now, that is not a diss. That is not me being particularly negative. I think, you know, I remember in the moment really enjoying it, and it probably in any other year would have been top 5. There were just other TV shows that I watched and enjoyed more and thought about more afterwards. So Mrs. Davis was still fantastic and well worth checking out if you haven't seen it. Is it a mini-series? Is it coming back? It felt like a mini-series. It felt like it ended in a place that was enough for me. But, you know, if they decided to do a season 2, I'd be definitely up for it. But it feels done. So if you're looking for something that is you can enjoy in the moment and then move on, I think it's definitely worthwhile. It's a high concept as well. Always funny. And there's a great character in it who is Australian who made me laugh a lot. So that is worth checking out. So that came in at number 9. Number 8, this is a disappointing one to come in at number 8 because there's not going to be any more seasons of it, but it was the TV series The Great, written and created by Australian writer Tony McNamara, who recently wrote the screenplay for Poor Things. A very, very, very funny writer. His use of language is second to none. He really knows how to have characters swear, and I'd like to think that's Australian. That's some Australian skills kicking in right there. This is been a series about Catherine the Great. It's her rise to being the ruler of Russia. It's fictionalized, and it's not necessarily something that you should be watching to get a complete idea of exact history, but I really loved it. I think Elle Fanning as Catherine was magnificent. Nicholas Holt as mostly Peter, but also another character who happens to look like Peter was very funny. Some of the supporting characters and actors were just as good as anyone, I reckon. Phoebe Fox was great. Charity Wakefield was great. And Freddie Fox, who will be mentioned a little bit later as well, made me laugh in every episode. Season 3 was magnificent. Just them having to deal with all the goings-on behind the scenes, people being two-faced, everyone trying to get into a position that suits themselves while claiming to be more than they are. I think it was fantastic. And I was really looking to enjoy many seasons of this. I reckon I would have been up for another 3 or 4 seasons. But they're not bringing it back. And weirdly, or maybe they had a sense that it wasn't coming back, I don't know. But the final scene of season 3 is kind of perfect as a finale. Does that make sense? Like, I would have liked to have had a lot more, but if it's not coming back, they finished it in a way that you can watch all 3 seasons and it ends on this particular moment and you go, you know what? This is good. This is, if you're not going to bring it back, this is a good place to end. So I really enjoyed The Great and can't stress enough how disappointed I am that we're not going to get more of it. Elle Fanning's grown up to be a great actor. I really have been a fan of hers for a while. And, you know, if you've listened to this podcast before, you know that the Sofia Coppola film Somewhere is one of my favorites of recent times, which I came, like, I have to be honest, I came to many years after it was brought out. But when Ben Elwood and I did our Sofia Coppola series on the podcast, I finally got around to watching it, and watching a little Elle Fanning in that when she was so young was really exhibiting some talent there, and being able to see it play out like it did in this TV show was a real treat. And I hope she gets more and more roles like this, especially funny roles. I think she's very good with delivering funny lines. Okay, coming in at number 7 is season 5 of What We Do in the Shadows. Look, I don't really know how to talk about this other than always makes me laugh. That's really all I can tell you. Watching the idiot vampires try to exist in the world that they live in is always funny. I never have a favorite character. It's always whoever I'm watching. Sometimes it's Colin Robinson. Sometimes it's Nadja. Nandor is, as soon as he appears and says something, you know, it's always funny. Laszlo, all of them are just, Laszlo's swearing is great, or just his particular pronunciations. Matt Berry is without a doubt a very, very funny actor. They're all great. And I read that they are finishing up with next season, and that's, once again, that is one of those things where you go, oh, that's a bit disappointing. But at the same time, you know, it's a sitcom. How far can you go with sitcoms? I always loved Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and that last season was fine, but it felt for me like all the jokes had been done. Now, sorry, in Brooklyn Nine-Nine's defense, that they came back at a time when, you know, attitudes towards police were so, in America specifically, were so charged that it was very hard to know how to proceed with a TV show like that. But also, just kind of joke-wise, it felt like it had squeezed as much as it could out of all those characters. And I really loved last season of What We Do in the Shadows, but it wasn't my favourite season. I think that's a sign, isn't it? So if we're going to get one more season of that, I hope that they are. As we've talked about before, it's always better to leave the party early, right? So I hope they're leaving the party early and we get to be a bit, oh. But once again, week to week, pound for pound, so many jokes. I laugh so hard, and you know, it's still right up there for me. So I'm looking forward to the final season at some point this year. Coming in at number six was a TV show that I have to be honest and say I didn't really have much interest in watching, but I liked the actors and I liked who was creating it. So I thought I'll give the first one a go and see if it works for me. And here it is at number six. That was The Last of Us. I am not a video game guy. Not because I'm against video games, because I just kind of realized many decades ago, I'm obsessive. Like when I'm into something, I'm really into it. And at that point, I was into movies, TV shows, books, comics, comedy, you know, basketball. Like I had enough stuff that I felt passionately about. And I remember just looking at video games and the way they were advancing and thought, oh, I just can't do this. You know, when they'd say, you know, you play this game and it's a 22-hour game, it's like, that sounds great and I'm going to avoid it. So that's what I did with video games in general. So I vaguely had heard of The Last of Us, so that made me realize how popular it must be that it had still seeped into my public consciousness, I guess. So sitting down to watch it, I came in with really fresh eyes. Once again, it's set during a, you know, this dystopian world that's been caused by a pandemic brought on by a fungal infection, which, you know, classic dystopian stuff transforms people into zombie-like characters. So, you know, like even the zombie thing feels to me like a bit, you know, just a bit ho-hum, you know? It's just not quite for me. And then I watched this and I really enjoyed the first two episodes. I love Pedro Pascal. I love Bella Ramsey. So I was thoroughly enjoying it for those reasons. You know, Anna Torv was in that first episode and she was, you know, great. I was quite shocked to see her, you know, not be around for as long as I expected. Sorry, that's a mild spoiler, but I already started too late. But, you know, this will not come as a shock to anyone who watched it. Episode 3, long, long time. I just loved it so much, and it really elevated it to a whole new experience for me. You know, and I went through a real roller coaster ride watching that episode because, you know, early on you meet that survivalist Bill, who's played by Nick Offerman, and you're like, ugh, this kind of guy, yuck. And then he seems to be living quite a happy life, and you go, oh, yeah, he's all right. He's doing his own thing. He's not hurting anyone. And then someone trips the alarm, and then it's like, oh, no, who's this? And you see, oh, it's Murray Bartlett playing Frank. And I love Murray Bartlett. This is great. But then you're like, oh, I don't know. What's this guy going to do? I don't trust anyone in this world. Like, leave Bill alone. And then from there, if you've watched it, you know how it plays out. And I was sitting here by myself blubbering, going, wow, I did not see any of this coming. None of it. Like, absolutely none of it. And it was that was the point where I went from, I'm really enjoying these first two episodes, to this is can't miss TV. And I was lucky that my friend Adam Richard has played the game, so he could, you know, talk me through where there were scenes that were, like, the way they were filmed were lifted directly from the video game. And you know what? I enjoyed the TV series so much for a moment, I thought maybe I should play the video game. And then I remembered why I hadn't. And, dodged a bullet there, I think. So there you go. So that's 10 to 6. So just as a recount, number 10, Beef. Number 9, Mrs. Davis. Number 8, The Great. Number 7, What We Do in the Shadows. Number 6, The Last of Us. So let's get to our top 5. And I honestly think in any other year, maybe number 5 would have been number 1. Like, it was genuinely difficult to kind of swap these around. But, and you know what? Maybe in 2 weeks' time I could do this again, and the top 5 would be slightly different. What I've brought it down to is like emotional response. That's been the tiebreaker in all of these TV shows. So all right. So let's go. Sorry, I'm banging on too much here. So let's go straight to number 5, which was season 4 of Barry. It was the final season of Barry. I loved it. I loved every season. I loved every episode. I loved that it felt like it was going to be a much funnier series than it turned out to be. I loved that Bill Hader never really lost focus, that Barry is awful. Just awful, and not afraid to show that he's awful. Like, a lot of the characters were awful, you know, and it also took wild swings with episodes. Like, there'd just be episodes where you're like, is this meant to be real, or is this meant to be a slight and heightened reality? It was so great, and characters in a way never let you down by always letting you down a little bit. Does that make sense? Like so, as an example, when towards the end, this is mild spoilers, but when Gene played by Henry Winkler, when Gene is you know, against a movie being made out of the experience of what he went through with Barry, and then learns from his agent that Daniel Day-Lewis wants to play him. Like, and the way he changes, that makes me laugh a lot, and that is true to the character, and everything seems to go the way that it should. Like, I think everyone... Like, maybe some of the characters get a comeuppance that is a little bit harsh. Like, maybe Gene's is a little bit harsh. But Gene was also pretty self-centered and a day-to-day awful person for a long time. So, you know, anyway. I thought it was experimental. I thought it took some wild swings. I'll always reward that in what I'm watching. It had one of the scariest moments I've seen in a TV show, where Sally ends up possibly having someone breaking into her place and following her around. Maybe. It has a really, like, it's really... Like, when it happened, I remember, even now, the hairs on my arms are standing up thinking about it. So, and the finale is interesting. It's kind of ironic. Maybe has, maybe has a maybe a sense of peace. It's interesting, however you want to read those final moments with.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
With Sally, I'd like to think that character ends up with a sense of peace. Sarah Goldberg, massively underrated in this TV show. Like, Bill Hader gets all the accolades because of writing, directing, etc. Stephen Root's always great. Henry Winkler, obviously fantastic. Anthony Carrigan as NoHo Hank, just sublime. But Sarah Goldberg, just unbelievably good. Just like, I just wish that she'd gotten some nominations or won something at some point. I hope she gets a lot more work, because I think it's a pretty brave performance as well to play a character who is ostensibly a narcissist, you know. But, you know, amongst all the other awful characters around, her character is in many ways not that bad. Anyway, I could bang on about Barry for ages. Once again, sorry, I'm trying to speak. Like, I've given away little bits and pieces here, but I'm hoping that if you haven't watched any of these TV shows that you go and check them out. So I should have probably said that at the start, but I just like to speak broadly about things in case hearing me talk about this stuff is the impetus for you to go and check out some of these shows. All right, number four. I just love Slow Horses. I love it. It every season has been right up there for me. I was hooked, line, and sinkered. Is that right? Hooked, lined, and sinkered? Anyway, I was hooked right from the first episode of the first season. It has so many fantastic actors and so many fantastic characters. You know, Jackson Lamb as played by Gary Oldman has fast become one of my favorite all-time characters in anything. He's so gross. He looks like he stinks. I love that he's super sharp. He's cynical. He's brilliant. He's awful. And you can tell that Gary Oldman loves every line that he gets to deliver. Jack Loudon as River Cartwright. Like, in any other TV series, he is the star of the TV show. But River is so sincere and so right on, and a bit useless. Not totally useless, just a bit useless. And it's a pretty tasty role for Jack Loudon to play, because he's a handsome and charismatic actor, but he gets to, it's almost like he gets to play against type. Kristen Scott Thomas as the Deputy Director General of MI5, Diana Taverner, is fantastic by herself in other scenes, but when you put her together with Gary Oldman, electricity is right there before your very eyes. And I can't go past Saskia Reeves as Catherine Standish, who just hurts me. She's just so such a beautiful actor, and she's so good in this, and she's so vulnerable. And and I should also mention just one other, Rosalind Eliza. I've never heard her name pronounced out loud. She plays Louisa. She's also fantastic as well. Look, if you haven't seen Slow Horses, it's on Apple TV. These are pretty much all the people that work for MI5 who have fucked up, and they haven't been sacked. They've been consigned to this place where they're referred to as to a place called Slough House, where they're referred to as Slow Horses, and they have to just put up with shit dull jobs, and they have to put up with the abuse of their awful boss, who is Gary Oldman's Jackson Lamb, who, you know, it's almost like he's trying to get them to quit out of boredom or frustration, and they keep getting involved in all of these situations where they have to act. They're all based on the books by Mick Herron, and season three sees the Slow Horses caught in a conspiracy that threatens to expose a buried MI5 secret in London. And you know, as the Slow Horses begin to work out what's going on, they start to face some real trials, and it gets really dangerous, and not from outside forces, but from MI5 itself. And each season is slightly different in feel, so they're all kind of spy stories. But the first two seasons are a little bit slower, not as a negative, but they're kind of more John le Carre kind of stories. But this one's a little bit more action orientated. I know some people prefer the first two seasons for that reason, but I actually quite like the change of flavor for this season. It was I found it incredibly exciting. So I thoroughly recommend Slow Horses. Easily could have been my number one TV show of the year, but as I'll explain with the next three, these other ones just kind of hit home a little bit harder when it comes to emotional responses. I'd get Apple TV just for Slow Horses, and one of the best things about it is every time a season ends, because they're so far advanced in what they're filming, you get a little trailer for the next season. How nice is that? So you finish a season, and then you get a little taster for the next season, and it makes you really pumped to get to it. So that's a nice little bonus thing that they do. Okay, top three. Season 5 of Fargo. Wow. Just wow. As you know, it's an anthology series inspired by not just the Coen brothers' Fargo, but also a lot of Coen brothers' movies. It's kind of like this shared universe, but it's rare that there's, you know, much in the way of crossover. They're very much standalone stories. This latest one was set in 2019, so it's the closest to present time that we've had. And it stars Juno Temple as Dot, who is just a, you know, normal housewife living in Minnesota, you know, doing her thing. And then suddenly it turns out she has a past that nobody knows about that comes roaring back into her life. And it's suddenly a tale of survival. I'll kind of leave it at that as a description. John Hamm stars as the Sheriff Roy Tillman. Honestly, one of the grossest performances I've seen. Not gross in the way that Gary Oldman is gross in Slow Horses. Gross as in, I hated him. I hated this character so much. There's these creepy little touches that really, really kind of suggest the weirdness of the character. He's like a right-wing conservative Trumpian, but when you see him with his shirt off, he's got pierced nipples. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can't even really explain why that is such a perfect attention to detail to tell you who that character is. But that's, if you kind of get that on a gut level, I reckon you'll get where I'm coming from with why I would tell you this. He is awful. Brilliant, by the way. Like, I think he's fantastic, but awful. Jennifer Jason Leigh plays Lorraine Lyon, who is also Dot's wealthy and conservative mother-in-law. Joe Keery is great as Roy's loyal son, a character that I oscillated between really fucking hating and also sometimes having real empathy for. And that is, like, that's good, right? Like, that's really good acting. Once again, attention to detail. I won't tell you what some of those things are, but sometimes he does things that are awful and then he'll do something physically and you go, yep, I completely understand this character. It is... Oh, and also Sam Spruill. Is it Spruill? He plays a mysterious drifter called Ole Munch. And once again, if you haven't seen Fargo series before, there's sometimes, and also the same with Coen Brothers films, there's sometimes this sense of the elemental within stories that are very much grounded in reality, and that's where Ole Munch comes in. I really love this series. I was really into it, and, you know, there's some action scenes in it that are thrilling, absolutely thrilling, interesting characters. Oh God, who's the actor that plays Dot's husband? Is it David Rishdahl? I think that's how you pronounce his name. He's also really good as well. But anyway, I was really into all of this. I was really enjoying it week to week. I was ruminating on it. This is the series that I was telling you about earlier, that the final 20-ish minutes, maybe even half hour, are so, for me, pitch perfect, and I did not see it coming. And the final scene, the very final scene that you rest on, was so interesting and unexpected and emotionally satisfying. Pushed it all the way up to number three. And once again, on another day, may be my number one. I loved it. I just loved it. I think it's one of the best endings I've seen to a TV series. And, you know, just incredibly emotionally satisfying. I could imagine some people watching it and saying, yeah, but I wanted what would normally happen in these types of TV shows. And, you know, you're not wrong to think that. But for me, I loved that it went against the grain. And I think the message that it is sending, that I'll say this very obliquely, that you don't have to stick to the narrative you tell yourself. That to me is the message in that final 20-odd minutes, and in particular that final scene. And I think they really nailed it. My favorite, I don't necessarily have it in order, but I would say the first two seasons are my favorite. Maybe season two is my favorite. Season one, I really love season three. I know some people, it depends on how you feel about this, one actor playing two characters. I really enjoyed season four. That's probably my least favorite. This one's probably up around, because of that finale, might be up number two, I'd say. It's definitely kind of anyway, why am I trying to rate this on the fly when I'm already ranking a whole lot of stuff? Fargo season 5, loved it. And if you want something that's going to really make you think, go and check that out on the SBS app. Okay, number 2 was season 3 of Reservation Dogs. I loved Reservation Dogs. I just thought it was a beautiful, beautiful TV series. And I just think the ending was pitch perfect. I loved all the characters. I loved all those young actors. I just thought they were so beautiful. And it was funny. It was gentle. It was just, once again, it had these moments where it's like the supernatural exists within the real world, but exists in a way where it's like, are they imagining this? Is this really happening? Does it really even matter? It felt incredibly spiritual, I guess. If you've never seen it before, and I know lots of people haven't watched it, and look, don't get me wrong, I get it. I still haven't watched Succession. You know, there's a lot of shit out there. So this is not, when I say, I know people haven't watched it, that's not me judging them, I just get it. But the series follows four Indigenous teenagers, American, they're Indians who live in rural Oklahoma. And, you know, it's about them growing up. And the first two seasons are about dealing with the death of a friend of theirs. And I know that sounds like a real bummer, but it's at times it's really funny. And it's and the way they deal with this grief, it takes them two seasons to kind of come to a point, and you like where they find a sense of grace, I guess. And then season three is quite beautiful in that it then explores the history of the older characters and how they were in their youths and how what they experienced trickled down to affect them as older people, and then how it draws parallels with our reservation dogs, but it also shows how the kids that we've been following have grown and what they've learnt. It's just beautiful, and I thought the finale was great, and it was one of those series where I was like, oh, are they finishing? But you know what? They landed it so beautifully. I'm good. Like, I'm good. It once again, leave the party early. Could I have kept going back to those characters in the world they lived in? Absolutely. But, yeah, where they finished was just sublime. So, Reservation Dogs at number two. And then number one was probably a little bit boring for a lot of people, but I just loved season two of The Bear. I loved season one. In many ways, I felt like season two was like even better. You know, like there's so much that goes on in this TV show. You know, it's Carmi and Sydney trying to develop the menu for their restaurant, The Bear. You know, it's trying to find money. It's trying to be business people, but also be inventive. There's really great episodes that you would think, you know, okay, well, that's your favorite episode, and that happens quite a bit. Like, you're watching an episode and you think, oh, I think that might be my favorite episode. There's an episode right in the middle which is set in the past, like about like a few years before The Bear is about to open, and it's with Carmi and his family, where you really get to meet his mum and extended family, and you get to see his you know, his brother when he was still alive, and it's high tension. It's a high tension episode, and it's really at times funny, but pretty much awful. And if you've had a bad Christmas with the family, then this will probably be triggering. But for me, the episodes that just really really popped for me were the quiet episodes, the episodes that were just kind of focusing on one character and seeing how they exist in the world. So, like, there's an episode that's just after the Christmas episode, which is called Forks, and it's Richie, who is Carmi's, you know, cousin, as it were. He's played by Eben Moss Bacharach, and it is he's sent off to a restaurant to kind of, you know, learn some skills, and it's just not the place that he should be, and it is a stunning episode, and it has a cameo appearance by someone that I did not see coming, and that the I don't know, the 7 minutes those two characters share together, probably my favorite 7 minutes of the season. I just loved it. It was, it's so understated and it's so beautifully acted. And, you know, the character of Richie is kind of a, you know, any good TV show, there's a character that drives you mental that you end up having a lot of affection for. As an example, in season one of, oh my God, I've just drawn a blank on, you know, 6 Feet Under. David was the character that was like, oh, fucking David. And by the end, David was my favourite character. And Richie, you know, oh, fucking Richie, shut up, mate. But Richie's slowly becoming my favourite character. Ayo Edebiri, who plays Sydney, is just oozes charisma. I love her character. You know, watching her grow as a character and a skill set is one of the reasons that I keep coming back. Marcus, who is learning to be a pastry chef, his episode, once again, a very quiet episode, but beautifully acted and just opposite Will Poulter as well. Once again, just not what you were expecting to have happen, and it is a sublime episode, and one of my favourites for the season. Actually, all of the guest stars are crazy, like that pop into it. Bob Odenkirk, Sarah Paulson, John Mulaney is really good. The person who turns up in the episode where Richie has to learn some skills, I don't even want to tell you who that is, because part of the joy of that character is who it's played by. And, you know, Jeremy Allen White as Carmi is compelling and he's frustrating and he kind of drives me a little bit insane, but like, I get it. Like, you get where he's coming from. You get why he is the way he is. And there's something fascinating to tell a story that backtrack here for a sec. So in the real world, they say if you can make a living from what you love and what you're good at, you never work a day in your life, right? That's the common thing that we're always told, right? Carmi is a brilliant chef, like brilliant, an award-winning chef who is bringing all his skills and talent, obviously has a charisma, everyone speaks highly of him, and it's like his job makes him fucking miserable. And that is a fascinating thing to watch. The thing that you're brilliant at, the thing that is meant to be your passion, and you're just anhedonic. Like, there's this inability to experience joy and how that just absolutely corrupts him. And not corrupts him as in makes him a, like, you know, he's doing dodgy things, but corrupts his ability to be in a moment and experience the victories. Now, I will give a caveat. This is not a caveat for me. This is a caveat from what people have said to me. I loved the ending to season one. I had a little cry. It was great. I loved the ending to season two. Didn't have a little cry on this one, but felt very emotional. And some of my friends didn't like the end of season one because they don't really, they get caught up in the, but how did they do such and such? And in this season, it's like, couldn't they have just, that's not how a certain thing works, a physical thing works. There would be, it's to do with a door, right? I really don't give a shit. Like, if you want to technically say these things, I get it, but emotionally I always end exactly where I'm meant to land. And also, I'll be honest with you, both seasons have finished with one of my favorite songs by one of my favorite bands, but not the song that most people would pick to finish with. Do you know what I mean? Like, so you know, there's lots of Radiohead fans out there. If you said to people, pick a Radiohead song to finish with. They've picked one that's one of my favourites that I don't often hear people mentioning. And season two finished with, you know, I've got a whole lot of REM albums from a certain. There's a certain period of REM that I'm pretty addicted to, and they finished with a song from REM that most people wouldn't pick, and they're two of my favourites. So that always emotionally really lands for me. I'm really excited to. Ah, great! This is hitting me in all the feels. So anyway, I loved it. I can't wait for it to come back. It's one of my, you know, keeping an eye on TV series. When's that back? When are you coming back? Can't wait. So there you have it. So let's go through it one more time. Starting at number 10, we go Beef. Number 9 was Mrs. Davis. 8 was The Great Season 3. 7, What We Do in the Shadows Season 5. 6, The Last of Us. 5, Barry Season 4. Number 4, Slow Horses Season 3. At 3, Fargo Season 5, 2, Reservation Dogs Season 3, and number 1, The Bear Season 2. So that is my favourite 10 TV series, with shout-outs to Time, Swarm, and John Oliver for 2023. As I said, I deliberately sit on these things a little bit longer to have a bit of time to let them settle and let me, you know, get my head around them. And anyway, let me know what you think. You know, like maybe you've forgotten most of these TV shows because you're not insane like me and keep a list of them. I keep a list so I can go back over them to do this podcast. So I'm always thinking of you guys. I don't want to. I'm sure I've missed something, but you know, there were other TV shows that I enjoyed. For All Mankind, I enjoyed. Wasn't my favourite season, but I'm still invested in that. I really enjoyed Monarch: Legacy of Monsters. Not every episode really did it for me, but the ones I enjoyed. You know, so there's other things out there to have a good time with. But that's my top 10. All right, I will let you go. I will be back soon. We're getting right to the end of the long form story I've been reading out under the Beautiful Tales for the Disenchanted line of stories that I normally tell. This one's been called The Ultimate. It's been many chapters. I think we're up to chapter 31, so we're really close to the end. I might even record the last couple of chapters as one big whole to finish up. Thank you for all the kind words on that. I know some of you are waiting for it to finish so you can just listen to it at your own pace. So thank you for being patient, and thank you for letting me know as well. That's very nice of you too. Just a quick thing. Some people ask me, where should you start with The Ultimate? And when I answer, people think I'm being a smartass, but I'm not. I'm just being honest. So if you have clocked on and go, hang on, this is chapter 31, where do I start? Chapter 1. Just go back and find it's the first 3 chapters. So, yeah, I'm not being sarcastic. I just don't know how else to answer it. It starts at chapter 1 and it'll end at the end. So every time someone asks me and I answer that, everyone looks at me as if say, oh, you don't have to be rude. So I'm not being rude. I just don't know how else to answer it. So we will finish that very soon, and we will have more best ofs. I've had time to have a little think about movies, etc. So keep an eye and an ear out for that. All right. Thank you for hanging out with me. It's always lovely to have your company. If you would prefer to listen to this ad-free, or you'd like access to bonus podcasts, I'm putting up a Can You Take This Photo, Please? From about 10 years ago with Richard Feidler over at the Patreon. So go to patreon.com/JustinHamilton. You'll find a tier that suits you, and you can access bonus podcasts and get this ad-free. But thanks for listening to this one. It's really appreciated. Hope your year is kicking along nicely, and I will be back soon. Until then. Thank you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.